You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you. Good afternoon and welcome to our show, August 22nd. Thanks so much for being with us on Tuesday of this next week. The voters of Tucson will count the votes that have been sent by mail to elect a mayor of Tucson, at least to nominate a mayor of Tucson, and to nominate council people from three wards in the city of Tucson. There are two people who have been very active against one of the candidates for mayor who is seeking the Democratic nomination. The Honorable Luis Gonzalez, the former state senator and Tucson businessman, Jesse Lugo, have banded together to support Steve Farley and ask you not to vote for Raheena Romero. Let's talk with the Honorable Luis Gonzalez, former Arizona State Senator, former Town of Guadalupe City Manager, former South Tucson City Manager, former Pima Community College Board member. Tucson's future is at stake. And you can find out more about his efforts from NoMoreRomero.com. NoMoreRomero.com or call him at 405-7515. Senator, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having us today.
Where are we from where we were a week ago when we had this conversation?
Well, you know, we are now, what, 4 days away from the election?
Won't be long now. Tuesday.
More or less, we're down to crunching numbers, trying to kind of take a peep at what we see and what we might be predicting out there. We've been doing a little bit of research in regard to some tracking internally of how the vote is turning out by ward. And the folks of Tucson are responding pretty well to turnout. They're at 27% approximately right now.
For a primary, that's pretty good.
For a primary in the Democratic primary.
Yep.
If you take that and compare it to 4 years ago, we've already surpassed what was the vote was in the 2015 election by at least 5,000 votes. So we've got a few days left. I'm sure people are going to be working hard. All the candidates are trying to corral as many votes as they can, which people have not yet voted, to take those ballots to the polling places that are open. There are six polling places to do that. Some very interesting numbers as we look at this, particularly in Ward 1. In Ward 1, as we see now, the turnout is turning out at about 20%, a little bit over 20% now, which in contrast to 4 years ago, they've already surpassed the 15-16% turnout from four years ago. Of course, there's a contested race there.
Sure.
But what's interesting here is that what we seem to be picking up is that Farley is doing quite well in Ward 1.
In her ward, yes.
He's doing very well in that ward. And as you know, that's a very high Hispanic voter area. And you contrast that with Ward 5, which also is a very high Hispanic vote area. Raheena is running about a 50% clip there. So when you take the rest of the votes, they're being split up between Farley and Dorman. So what we see there is, if that's the case, and then we're looking at a high turnout in wards 2, 3, 6, and 4, Raheena's in deep trouble. Really deep trouble.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things going on here. First of all, we're in a historic moment. We have never seen money like this thrown into a campaign. Third-party effort may exceed $1 million, may even go to as high as $1.5 million on her behalf from outside sources. We know that many of those outside sources were contacted by Raul Grijalva, the longtime congressman who employs Raheena Romero's husband. We know that happened. Was there coordination between the Raheena Romero campaign and these outside political PACs? Well, I would suggest there'd have to be. If you take a look at the brochures, they're almost identical. But if you don't believe that, that's fine. The simple truth of the matter is this is all outside money. This is not Tucson money. This is Phoenix money. This is out-of-state money. This is money raised from labor unions and others on the behest, I think, of Raul Grijalva, the longtime congressman. And I have said over and over again, Raheena Romero, if she is elected mayor and gets this nomination, goes on to win the general, and we get a Ward 1 council person who is her former AG, has two votes to anything she ever wants. And I would say, too, that for Democrats threatening to take on Raheena Romero, if she's successful in this effort, they do so at their own peril, because obviously she can raise a lot of money to beat you. So, I mean, she's going to own this town. So if you want to, if she's going to buy and pay for it, here's the price tag, but she's going to own it. That's my opinion.
Well, John, if you recall the first time that Senator Gonzalez was on your radio show, he mentioned also that we understood based on information that was being bragged by his chief of staff, Reyes, that he was proud that the over $350,000 was going to be then from outside money be supporting Romero. Well, $350,000 is getting close to $1 million.
Million and a half now, perhaps.
Boy, I tell you what, you know, as some of your individuals that you've had on your show where they were part of the leadership group with the Pima County Democrats of Tucson, where they understand that they believe that the system of clean election has perverted the system, has prostituted the party, obscene mockery of the system because of the high outside money that's been donated. And certainly, John, we understand that maybe they might not communicate visually, but with a wink and a nod, they understand what one individual has to do in order to support Romero.
Well, I tell you, we've just never been here before, Senator. This is uncharted waters. To have this much money thrown at a local campaign like this and a Democratic primary has never happened before, ever.
Well, that's true, John, and it's sad commentary that we have to put up with this. You know, to have a candidate who continues to say and advertise every single day that she is a clean candidate and not come up and disown what is going on and demand that these outside sources coming in stop doing what they're doing, particularly the kind of junk that they're putting out, which is misleading the public and out-and-out lies about other candidates, is atrocious. And she should stand up and take a look at her moral compass here that she says she has, and, you know, basically denounce what's going on.
Well, I've said that to Randy Dorman. I said, if you lose, you can run again. If Raheena Romero loses, she'll never be able to run again. The Democratic Party, and I talked to Allison Jones at length just the other day for 25 minutes, and she said she's appalled by this, that the Democratic Party, and she's the chair of the Democratic Party, is absolutely, totally ashamed of this kind of effort on the part of the Democratic Party in a Democratic primary. And people are upset about this, and well, they should be. They're having their party stolen from them. They're having their candidates stolen from them. And it's just out-and-out theft paid for by out-of-county money. Period.
We can all be upset over this, John, but let me tell you, I do not believe that the voters of Tucson are going to allow this to happen. We'll wait and see on the 27th, but I don't believe that the voters of Tucson are so naive as to allow their votes to be bought. I have a lot more faith in the voters than some people might. And if you look through the facade and you start seeing what is really going on here, it's pretty obvious. You know, it doesn't take a genius to figure it out. And we see that in the returns that we're seeing now, the turnout that's coming out. When you start doing a little bit of tracking and you find out that particularly in the Hispanic community, they're rejecting that kind of tactic, I'm telling you, when this is all over, somebody's going to have egg in their face. Big
I think
time.
We're going to be terribly damaging to them. You know, we've had powerful Congress people here before. You go back to when I first got here in 1967, there was a fellow by the name of Mo Udall. I don't think there was anyone that enjoyed greater support than Congressman Udall. And one day you and I and Jesse Lugo will have a contest to see who can name all of the opponents of Mo Udall that were beaten by him, because I can't remember them all. But the truth is, he stayed out of these primaries. I ran for the state Senate against one of the favorites. And he was asked to get in the middle of that and oppose me. He said, I won't do it. That's up to the people of this district to go ahead and nominate for the state Senate who they want to. And he could have got involved in that. Could have got involved in a lot of races, and he didn't. But here's what Raul Grijalva is trying to do. He's trying to get involved in all the other particular races to build this machine that will be unstoppable forever, at least as long as he lives. Because they simply will have a couple of seats on the city council, might even be four or five before the next election's over with, and they're going to own a lot of people in this town. And they're going to show them in this year, 2019, in the next 4 days, how they can buy these races, how they can buy these particular races without of county money.
John, if you recall back in November 2015 when the voters did not approve Proposition 405, which would increase the salaries to mayor and council. Today, since it was defeated, a council member makes $24,000 a year. A mayor makes $42,000 a year. So you have to ask the question, what has been promised to these groups that will exceed $1 million? What has been promised to them if Romero gets elected?
Well, something had to be promised, because they don't do this just for an exercise in recreation. You know, I mean, this is not a hobby for these folks. This is a business. Well, you've been in this game a long, long time, Senator. You understand politics. This is a takeover of our county, isn't it? Or the beginning of one.
Well, look, what I see happening here is they're trying to use the same tactic that they used in Phoenix to elect their mayor the last election down in Phoenix. There's the same players, basically. Now they're trying to take that particular tactic and bring it to Tucson. So it's not just simply a trying to take over Pima County. It's also happening in Maricopa County. So you see a much larger conspiracy going on with this group. They want to be able to control whatever there is, and then, hey, no argument as to whom's in charge. But I think they're up for a rude awakening here in Tucson. The people of Tucson are not going to buy this.
Jesse Lugo, I just can't imagine after this is all said and done, there's going to be any great feelings between these folks. I thought when the three of these people started after the Democratic nomination for mayor, and obviously we're talking about Randy Dorman, Raina Romero, and Steve Farley, that they had a lot in common, had some differences that separated them, but they had a genuine respect for each other. These hit pieces put out by the third-party effort on behalf of Raina Romero are filthy lies concerning Steve Farley, just flat-out lies, and destructive, I think, to the whole process. I don't see how they come out of this singing kumbaya. I really don't. I think the Democratic Party is weaker because of this effort. I think it's going to suffer because of this effort. And I think we're all going to pay a price for this when it comes to Democrats being strong in 2020. We're all going to pay for this ambition of Raina Romero and Raul Grijalva. We're all going to pay for it.
Absolutely.
Every progressive, every Democrat.
John, where you have individuals that that support Romero saying that about negative campaigns, the information that Senator Gonzalez shares on TotalIntegrity.com, these are the facts. This is based on history, what she has done or not done in 12 years. But I have to tell you, all this started when Romero made a statement against Tucson's number one philanthropist, Jim Click, that donated $500 to Farley. She was not prepared because Farley had both torpedoes loaded, and boy, he responded. And what he said at that time was, my co-chairman, I said, was not one who donated to the Trump campaign. So if whoever consulted her to fire that first shot gave her bad information, because here you have Farley that was prepared for that debate. They had other gatherings, John, but they were forums. You know, they're touchy good feelings But you have to allow the candidates to participate in the debate. This way, they can answer wide-open questions without having to be briefed on them. But I tell you, John, if you look at all her propaganda that she has sent out to voters, you're missing Barrio Anita, Barrio Hollywood, Barrio El Rio, Barrio Silver Cross, Menlo Park, Barrio Viejo. But most important, you're missing first responders, police and fire not supporting her campaign. And you would think after 12 years being in office that they would then join to support her, but that's not the case. If police and fire say no, then I'm telling you, and you're listening to audience, say no to Romero and make sure she does not get voted our next mayor for the city of Tucson.
Well, you can go to nomoreromero.com and find out more about the effort of the Honorable Luis Gonzalez, former state senator, and Jesse Lugo. You can call them at 405-7515. Answer any of the questions you have. I'm sure they will. The Honorable Luis Gonzalez, former state senator, former town of Guadalupe city manager, former South Tucson city manager, and former Pima Community College board member. Just go to nomoreromero.com. Yeah, I don't think this will end on Tuesday, Luis Gonzalez. I just don't. I think that there's going to be so many hard feelings, no matter how this ends, that it's going to really be divisive to the Democratic Party. It didn't have to be this way. Raina had sufficient funds to tell everybody who she is and what she is and give them an opportunity to vote for. Instead, she relied upon the employer of her husband. That's Raul Grijalva, a congressman who employs her husband as his chief of staff, and literally allowing that congressman to make these phone calls that would raise $1.5 million on top of her clean elections money to get her the nomination. And that has overwhelmed any amount of money that has been put into this race by Randy Dorman or by Steve Farley. It's almost 4 or 5 to 1. And as far as Randy Dorman's form, it's 10 to 1. And it came in at the last minute under these PACs, of which you cannot follow, no matter how skilled you are, as to who actually wrote this check out.
Well, John, we also understand that Grijalva's other co-partner in Washington, D.C. is Glenn Miller. He's in town. I guess he's here to circle the wagons and regroup and see that can they resurrect the campaign, because it appears that they know they no longer are in the lead for to be our next mayor. And so whatever Mr. Miller's doing, all we say is, and history has shown that he's not a kind person. But on behalf of Mr. Gonzalez and myself, a lot of business people fear a retribution. We want to tell is that one thing that did not occur, we felt that the business community, faced all these years complaining about how them being treated the city of Tucson. But isn't it a shame, John, that here you have two former board members of Tucson Business Coalition carrying the water again for the business community? And by golly,
Surprise, surprise.
So, you know, there's some things, you know, it's just deja vu. Because as you recall, John, during the TBC days in the 90s, boy, I say we challenged authority, whether it be city or county government. And unfortunately, I said once because of the real estate market that had collapsed, there was apathy and it did not continue to succeed. But again, individuals still, when they wanted help, they reached out to Senator Luis Gonzalez and myself to lead the charge. But we're doing it here. Why? Because both of us are native Tucsoners. We care about Tucson. We care about our community. We care about what's going to happen to a future generation. And this is why we're here, to make sure that the public is aware of the truth and nothing but the truth. And hopefully they will then vote for another candidate other than Romero.
Here's a name we recognize, Sixto Molina, former police chief of South Tucson. Sixto, welcome to the show. You're with former Senator Luis Gonzalez and Jesse Lugo. Hi, Sixto.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yes.
I just wanted to make a comment. I've worked with the Ward 1 council office because I worked on the west side going all the way back to the Ruben Romero days. So recently, about 2 months ago, I contacted the Ward 1 office and said, hey, look, 22nd Street at the Ruben Romero overpass over Mission Road needs to be cleaned up. There's weeds growing, trees growing inside the guardrails where the traffic runs. And they said, okay, we're going to take care of it. Well, it's been 2.5 months. I've made, I think, three trips, personal trips, to the Ward 1 office, and nothing has been done. Yesterday, I finally took matters into my own hands, and I went down to the city service center and talked to the people to generate a work order. But for 2.5 months, nothing has been done. And I'm a firm believer that the indicator of future performance is past performance. And I got to agree with you guys that Rahina has not done her job. There's also, we were promised that a park, a regional park, something like Lincoln Park and Udall Park, would be built on the southwest side of town between Interstate 19 and the Santa Cruz River north of Ajo for baseball fields and Little League fields. That's been on the drawing boards for 25 years. Nothing has been done on this side of town. My feeling is, since Bruce Wheeler left office, we've had a very weak Ward 1 council office, and that's got to change.
Sixto, thanks so much for your great service to our town. You're one of the best law enforcement officers to ever serve this great community of ours. Thank you so much for being on our show today. We appreciate your call. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sixto Molina, former police chief of South Tucson. Jesse, thank you.
I also want to share some other information
with you. 1 minute, go.
John, if you recall back in 2010 when Proposition 400 failed, look at the one item, and Councilmember Romero was part of the mayor and council at that time, where a decision by them was to suspend of residential paving streets and roadways maintenance, but also to eliminate funding for more than 130 vacant police positions. Look at today where Tucson Police is understaffed. But it's taking 12 years, and this issue has still have not been resolved.
Well, that's the legacy she lives with and leaves with.
That's right.
All right.
John, one thing,
30 seconds,
one comment I want to make. I feel very badly for the leadership of the Democratic Party here in Pima County when this is all over, trying to put this Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Destructive. It really is.
But let me make a very short prediction here. I believe that they will not be successful in what they're trying to do. I think that the people of Tucson will not allow their plan to be consummated. And I think at the end you're going to see Mr. Raul Grijalva turn around, put his tail between his legs, and just walk away.
All right. Thank you so much, Senator. Good to see you. Jesse, thanks
John,
for being there.
Thank you again.
This portion of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. You can call Mike Emery at 323-8650. He's an honest mechanic, fair, professional. There are hundreds. There are, in fact, hundreds of places you can have your car repaired throughout southern Arizona. Only one Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. 323-8650 is the number to call. Each service tech is ASE certified. Customer reviews by the hundreds are available for you to look at. I'm very proud to recommend Mike Emery and Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. 323-8650. I'm John C. Scott. I trust Mike Emery to repair my family's cars. You can too. John C. Scott, Political Talk Forum. And we like to thank so much Leela Counts for coming in. She had predicted that TUSD was going to turn things around. We weren't going to have the flight that we had seen year after year after year of students leaving TUSD. And perhaps there's some good news on that count, as the enrollment decrease at TUSD is slowing. That, according to numbers released for the district on Wednesday, this year's enrollment decrease during the first 15 days of school is the smallest in 5 years. The district lost about 270 students this year compared with last year's 40-day count. TUSD's 40-day enrollment loss was, in 2018, 1,272 students. Leela Counts is a member of the TUSD school board. You said this was going to happen. I don't know how you knew this, but by golly, it is happening. That's very good news, Leela. Very good news.
Creative solutions.
So what happened, do you think?
So we have about 1,000 more students than we did last year that had enrolled.
Yes.
And the creative solutions, I think that being open, all TUSD schools were open during the summer, and we took in, and during those summer months alone, 10,000 families. So that was something new, a good response for their summertime enrollment loss. I think having the greatest growth and academic improvement of any district and the entire state of Arizona had a big impact in our reputation and people understanding what we are truly doing for kids and giving them a good education. And we've just done a ton of work. I think the Red for Ed movement and the No on Prop 305, which was the voucher movement, really educated Arizonans, and particularly Tucsonans, about the charter school movement, the voucher hopes to privatize public education, and they saw our teachers come out in droves. And I know some charter school teachers participated in the Red for Ed marches and advocacy work, but not to the level that TUSD teachers did and all public school teachers did. So there is a lot of reasons why I think we've had this really significant improvement, and those are a few of them.
By the way, TUSD, Southern Arizona's largest school district, has seen a 26% enrollment decline, I think, since the year 2001, when total enrollment almost hit 60,000. It was 59,270. And as of Wednesday, the district's enrollment is about 45,300. But you're very correct to say that over 1,000 students did not leave the district, as the number last year was 1,200. This year it's just a little over 200. Something right is happening. Something right is happening at TUSD. Although would you'd still see these declines. You really would.
I'm sorry, what was that last piece
you said? You would see the decline continue if something didn't go right here.
Right. There was. There is positive change. And I think Dr. Trujillo is doing a great job. He is so transparent and accessible to the community and is really building the trust back with Tucsonans. So I'm proud to be a part of this leadership team.
You know, I think, too, the board has every right to take some kind of a basic responsibility for this good news. This had been a board, and you witnessed it before you were on it, of dispute after dispute, one rancor after another, and it got to the particular point where every particular meeting was a war, and now that's changed. I think everybody said, look, we got to come together here and save this district and make it better. I think everybody, from whatever particular political slant that they happen to find themselves in, is doing that. I think everybody's holding their tongue when they need to and then applying themselves when they have to make this a better district. I don't know. Do I misread the board? I think something good is happening.
The behavior is much better. There is very few public conflicts. People are handling themselves much more professionally and respectfully. And I think that I made that a big part of one of the reasons why I ran is I talked to thousands of people and everybody was sick of the infighting. I mean, it was just in watching it myself as an outsider, it was disgusting. That it didn't really represent the hardworking people that are in TUSD and the families that are choosing TUSD. And so we've done a lot of work as a board. We're continuing to do work on our dynamics and learning how to work together effectively. So
what do you do?
Everybody's sick of it, and you can't get anything done when you fight like that. So enough is enough. Let's be adults. Let's be real leaders, and we have to work together.
Well, what is next now? This is not the end of the road. I mean, just because you happen to see lesser numbers leaving the district doesn't mean your work is done. What's going to keep those students there next year and the year after, do you think?
I think keeping the improvement and the focus on our academics and really filling the classrooms with high-quality, certified teachers, investing in librarians, those resources that we have that a lot of the charter schools or private schools do not have, and investing back in the classroom, in our school, and just growing academically, I think, is going to continue this positive trend with our enrollment.
It seems to me, too, Layla Counts, that you've come to a conclusion that your curriculum is as good as everybody else's, and you just need to promote that. A lot of people aren't familiar with the curriculum in these classrooms, and they need to be able to go out and market that. That's all you have to market, by the way, is that education, and you're doing that now. Another thing is you finally come to grips with a discipline program and a policy that there's no confusion about. I mean, it was schizophrenic. Oh, good for this kid, not good for the other kid, all doing the same damn thing. And then an insecure feeling of parents and students about the safety of their child in school. You even had a bunch of thugs take over Palo Verde High School, for God's sake. I mean, you had to change that, and you did. And are you comfortable with these changes? Have you gone far enough?
I'm very comfortable with the changes. I think it was compromise in that we strengthened our lower-level offenses, student offenses, so that they could have some sort of consequence. But we haven't thrown the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. We are still doing the best practice, the educational acknowledged best practice of restorative justice, and we're backing it up with support for the teachers in the classroom, and that everybody from the principal to the hallway monitors is aware of what needs to happen, and it has professional development around that. And I've said this before, it's not something, when we talk about discipline and we talk about behavior issues, it's not something that we can just feel like, okay, we're done with that. We never need to revisit that again. When you're talking about personalities, when you're talking about social dynamics, when you're talking about behaviors and psychology, it's something that is so important, and it's such an embedded part of education, and it's something that needs constant vigilance and attention and support. So we're going to continue to make progress in that area. It's not something that is done, and I still think that there is room to grow there as far as everybody getting on board with it and understanding and having buy-in with it.
Well, I will have to tell you, this is not an easy job. You have difficulties with this district because you have literally 80% of the parents in that district that live under the poverty level. You have all kinds of racial challenges that other districts do not have, poverty challenges. But you have to meet those head on. I mean, they're not going to go away. Right. And you have to keep schools open, and you have to offer a quality education. In fact, even a higher quality education than anybody else in order to keep these kids at TUSD.
We don't, I would hate to call this the luxury because I think that this is immoral, but it's a practice that is very common with charter schools or private schools, is that we need to serve all children, and all children all the time. And people, we can't just say, oh, this isn't a good fit for us, or I think your child's not able to keep up with our curriculum, or all these creative ways that they, these charter schools have to push kids out. We accept everybody. We do our best to make it work, and we have a really difficult hand, and we're doing the best with what we're dealt right now. We need more money from the state. We need to not be 49th in per pupil funding in the entire country. I mean, that is pathetic. But we are doing, I think, a good job with the hand that we're dealt.
I think you're doing a very great job. And congratulations on the success story, and we appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, John.
You bet. Layla Coates, member of the TUSD School Board. We'll be back in a moment with the independent candidate for mayor of Tucson, Ed Ackerley, after these messages. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum. We cover Southern Arizona politics. We've done that for over three decades. We make no exception to this city election of 2019. Ed Ackerley is an independent candidate for mayor. People say independent. No independent can win the mayor's office. Yes, they can. This is an individual who is informed, who's worked hard, done his homework, sounds like a mayor, acts like a mayor, and it'll all depend on how you vote come November whether he is mayor or not. But he has to be sitting with the sidelines taking a look at this trifecta of Democrats, Raheena Romero, and of course Randy Dorman, and Steve Farley, battling it out in what has become a historic down and dirty campaign for the Democratic nomination. And you had to be surprised as anybody else, Ed Ackerley, at the amount of money thrown into this primary.
Well, it is interesting that when we first got started, there was a lot of collegiality. There was a nice sense of everyone is trying to do the very best they can. It amazes me how much money is being thrown behind at least two of the candidates.
That's all changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, that just changed all of that. And I think the dynamic has been know, it's changed. It's just changed, and it's a different kind of a race now. And we have to be prepared for that coming up after the primary is decided. What's going to happen in the general then? Are they going to continue that kind of an approach of going after me at that point? And so we've been talking about that, of what our strategies might be, and we're pretty clear as to what we're going to be doing.
I think you have to explain about why you're an independent running in this race. People will say, well, there's no Republican. Now, how come you're not a Republican? There's no Republican. And, of course, there's reasons for that, obviously.
Well, definitely. There's 59,000 or more Republicans. There's 80,000 registered independents. You put those two numbers together, you can compete against the Democratic numbers with that type of arithmetic. And so it was a strategic move on our part to see if we can engage the independent voter, engage the Republicans, and engage. Quite frankly, there's going to be some people on the Democratic side who are a little bit upset that their candidate didn't win, and we hope to gain some of those folks as well.
There's going to be a dissatisfaction beyond anything you've ever seen before, because people are angry about this race.
Right. And I'm just trying to promote what I think that the mayor should be doing, which is leading the council and being an advocate for the services that we're supposed to be providing as a council, which are pretty basic. It's basic services. And some of the discussion that has been around some of the broad social and maybe even federal issues, you know, we can talk about those things, and certainly there is a forum for us to be talking about those things. But in actual fact, a mayor's duties is limited to the services that we provide, and we have to really focus on that, and we have to get somebody in the mayor's office that can help lead the council and to provide those services in an affordable way, but also in a fiscally responsible way, and also prioritize what things we're going to be doing. And I think the most obvious one is fix the roads and support public safety. Those are the two major points that I keep hearing about, and we need to do that.
Well, it seems to me that we've learned a lot from the debates that have happened until this particular point, where it's all come down to really out-of-county money saying this about the candidate for and against Raheena Romero, and, of course, against Steve Farley. But you've never veered from the course of what you said are the most important issues, and those are the basic services that a city council has to provide its people. And we're talking about police, fire, and roads. I mean, it doesn't get away from that, no matter how much money you've got coming in from out of county.
Right, and by charter, that's what the role of the mayor is to run the council, run the council meetings, and to work with the city manager to make sure that all the services are provided. And so it's to provide leadership, and these things are important things. I cannot tell you how many times someone has come up to me and told me about, can you fix the road in front of my business, in front of my house? It's just on the top of their mind, and they don't trust the government right now, because even though we've tried to be transparent, everyone has tried to say that it's a different time and a different era. They just don't trust that we're going to spend the money on the roads and spend the money on the police, and we just have to be transparent and do that and be authentic and make that happen.
Well, it seems to me, too, that you sit here and you have major decisions to make. What are you going to do about the RTA money down the road? Are you going to try to expand it for use of maintenance? Maybe, yes or no. You support that, no?
I absolutely support that, and I think the RTA would be well-served to do that. I just think it helps solve the regional transportation issues that we have in our community and helps us complete some of these road improvement projects that we've just not been able to accomplish because of a variety of reasons, mostly budgetary, but you know, there's also a priority issue here. We need to prioritize road maintenance and road repair as the number one thing that we do in the transportation area, and I think the RTA can be a really big bonus for us in that area.
You're an ad man, obviously. I didn't say mad man, I said ad man.
Thank you.
And it seems to me that that's a skill that has been lacking from time to time. At City Hall, we've never known how to market ourselves very well.
I had a great conversation with Brent Durad, who is the executive director of president of the Visit Tucson group. And they're the ones that are out telling people to come to Tucson, visit Tucson, come and spend your vacation here. And I told him we need to double his budget. We need to get him to $20 million in advertising budget, because that is really the engine that drives. When I was a kid, you know, Tucson was the place for people to come and vacation and be here. And we've lost a little bit of that to some of these other cities that have done a very good job of marketing themselves. I think we've talked before about there's even a city from New Mexico that's on the side of all of our buses. And you look at them as they drive down the street. It's like, why are we not doing that in other places around? And so we got to get Brent and the Visit Tucson folks some more money. And we need to market the heck out of Tucson and get some visitors in here. I get the sales tax and the bed tax and the hotel tax all increased so that we can have a robust economy. And that's how people get familiar with Tucson. Then they might want to move here and they might want to start a business here.
Well, in my early days in Tucson, I used to walk down the street, see John Wayne, Steve McQueen, some of the greatest movie stars of our time. And old Tucson was a mecca for the Westerns.
We've got to talk to
We can bring that money back.
We've got to talk to the state about that. We've got to talk to the governor, and we've got to talk to our state legislators about that. The legislatures in other states have already made some tax concessions and kind of stolen that business away from us. And so our folks need to wake up to that and say we can bring that back, and it was a driver for us for many years. I think it can be a driver again in the desert.
Didn't go away. No. Horses didn't go away. We still have horses, don't we?
And the weather is beautiful too for shooting.
Well, so. it obviously is, and we still have the great glorious sunsets that if you ride off into, that's the only sunset you'd choose is one from Tucson. It just seems to me everything we wanted at times is everything we had. And we forget that sometimes.
Exactly. I think that I keep saying that when I grew up here in Tucson as a young man, it was a great place to grow up. I've raised three sons with my wife. We have three wonderful boys, and now we have two grandsons. And Tucson is a great place to grow a family and grow a business, and we need to get that message out to other people, and we need to be telling each other what a great community we have. And I think being the chief marketing officer of the city is one of the roles of the mayor. And that's what I'm going to intend to do, is to tell people the great things that are going on in Tucson. And I'm even going to use this mayoral campaign for the next 90 days to really focus on the positive and see what we can do together to even make it even better.
Well, they have to recognize you now. I mean, they tried to ignore you in many of these forums because obviously it was a Democratic primary. You don't have a primary.
Right.
They did include you in some, I must say.
Yeah, half a dozen. I got to go to a half a dozen, which was nice.
And now, after next Tuesday, you are the opposition to the Democrats.
Well, I think I have the inside track because I'm the only one that's on the ballot, and I have been for quite some time. And so whoever comes the 27th is the person being added to the ballot to go against me.
So
I have to look at I have to look at it in that perspective, yeah. I'm just waiting for a contender to come see what they can do.
Any changes in the direction of your campaign after this primary?
Not a bit. We're going to stay at the 10,000-foot level. We're not going to get down into the weeds. I am obviously not that excited about the dark money and the things that are happening on the Democratic side. I hope that the campaign can be about issues and not about personality. It's got to be about what we can do to lead the city into the future. And we have to be talking about those things. What will the mayor be doing to help guide our city council and the policymaking that is made there in that chamber? What is going to be good for Tucson for the next 20 to 50 years?
We're down hundreds of police officers. How do you get them back? How do you pay for it?
Well, one of the things I think we can do is perhaps bring back some of our retired officers that have been gone for 20 years, 25 years. They put in their time, then they've been gone for a couple of years. Some of them still would like to come back. I think we could augment, come up with some creative solutions. We are down, some say now, below 800, and that's just not a number that we want to be at. We've got to get some more police officers on the street. I was talking with one of the command officers last week, and I even said to him, you know, we got to get you out of your plain clothes, back into your uniform, and back out on the streets. And he kind of sat back and kind of smiled at me and kind of said, yeah, I think you're right. You know, we have these police officers in these silos around town. They're doing excellent work in the areas that they're working on. But what the populace is saying is that we don't see police officers on the street. We don't see them coming and responding in a timely fashion. That's as much a marketing thing as it is a public safety thing. It's, we just got to do a better job of providing the services that we're supposed to under the charter.
As you take a look at this particular budget, it's always been a struggle one way or another to try to figure out, you know, what is the highest priority? What do we spend our money on first? I think the council is trying to come to grips with that and to prioritize really, what are the most important expenditures a city can make, and do those first?
We have to do that. We have to do that as a council, but as citizens, we have to make sure that the infrastructure and the public safety is there. Our new companies won't come to Tucson, and families won't come here and live, and we're just going to have some grumbling from the people that live here about how terrible the roads are and how come they can't get a police officer to respond to their personal situation. We just can't have that anymore. We have to change the dynamic, and we have to change the priorities. The budget is the process to do that, It is the list of priorities for the council, and we got to change that and focus on public safety, transportation, economic development, and continue with the parks program.
I've been familiar with some of your clients with Ackerley Advertising, some very large companies all across America. But first of all, you dealt with their identity. How do we identify these people in a marketplace so that they come out first? And you've been able to do that. You want to do that for Tucson?
I do. And I think that we have a dichotomy of a bunch of different values that we're trying to communicate, whether it be the water department or whether it be the parks department or whether it be our business services department or environmental services department. There seems to be a lack of branding across the board of what the city of Tucson does in terms of its own worth to a consumer, and they don't see it. And we got to show people what we do, and we got to make it visible to them so that they know that the money that they're putting in is being spent wisely on the things that they've asked us to do, which are pretty basic. They're municipal services, and we need to do them very well.
And when it comes to money, obviously the city's always going to run out of it one way or another. So you have to find ways that are acceptable to the people of Tucson to pay for things that they hadn't been paying for. And this council did that. They asked for more money for streets, and voters said, yes, I'll pay more. Same thing with parks. We'll pay more. I think if you have a level of confidence in the constituency, that constituency will obviously pay you back by supporting you and your budget and your hopes and dreams for the town.
I think authenticity is the issue. I think transparency helps. We just have to be focused on the priorities and say, we're going to do this. We're finally going to tackle these problems, and we're going to go after them in a robust way and give them as much attention as they deserve. It's important for the future for us to work on water, for us to work on roads, public safety, those things which are make our city great, but it's the infrastructure that lays the groundwork for everything else we do.
He's qualified. He's done his homework. Ed Ackerley is the candidate for mayor of Tucson, and we'll find out who he's going to face off against in the general election come Tuesday night. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you very much.
Ed Ackerley, candidate for mayor. This broadcast brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Call Mike Emery at 323-8650. 323-8650. Mike Emery is honest, fair, and a professional. Hundreds of choices you have to repair your car. I recommend only one. Perfection Auto Works, 1046 North Beverly. Back tomorrow over this backyard fence, talking the politics of Southern Arizona from 3 to 5. Hope you will join us. Stay tuned next for the best local talk show in America. It's Steve Rivera's Eye on the Ball from KVOI, The Voice. Now this.